Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, episode 365 Spectacular Edition. I'm your host, Robert, and good on the Squid Sisters for winning the Splatfest, but damn it, Off the Hook got robbed! Robbed! And trust me, I know what I'm talking about because it's in my name. And with me, I have.
Hello and welcome to Is It a Good Idea to Microwave This? I'm Jory Karen, and I'm your sidekick, Riley McElwain.
And.
Okay, let's Instagram, let's those who are trying to fuck. You trying to do that, make sure your phone is off or make sure you get on Instagram.
Wait. I'm losing track. Was this the Shannon Sharp thing?
Yes.
Keep your phone off.
Oh, goddamn.
Club Shay Shay has a new meaning to it now.
Yep.
Oh, man, I almost forgot about it.
Now, that's what I call a nightcap.
Oh, God, this is turning into a fucking talk show monologue at this point.
Yeah.
God, where's...
You can say it was definitely the first take.
Well, damn.
Ah, man, where's fucking Seth Meyers when you need him?
We cannot play that clip because, well, then again, we can't play it because we don't got it. And good thing we're not on Twitch, because if we do play it, we would get suspended for a week.
No fucking shit. Duh.
Yeah, just ax double toasted.
Yeah, damn it, Core, yeah. You should know better by now.
I say that, but it's Corey fucking Coleman.
Yeah, there's all kinds of shit happening on the internet, but this isn't a gossiping about people videotaping themselves having sex on the internet podcast yet. No, this is the Decibel Boost Podcast, episode 365. So, how's everyone's week been going? Please tell me we can get through this quickly.
I will keep my spiel as quick as possible. I'm a neurotic nutcase, in case you can't tell. I have decided, out of the spur of the moment, you know what would be a good idea? Starting a new Twitter account to get people to go over there. It didn't work because I'm an impulsive, neurotic nutcase. So I just retooled all my social stuff, and now I'm back on the social stuff because... fuck it! Why not? I never said I was a very smart individual. I have apparently too many problems going on in my head that result in me being... who I am. I'll talk about that one day. We don't have time for it now because we have everything to get to, but stay tuned till the end to find out where you can listen to me talk about random bullshit. Also, it's raining outside and I don't like the rain.
Rain. Fun times. Mark, what about you?
Let's see. Work usual, life usual, writing stuff, heck of a days off last week, pretty good. That's it.
Okay, cool. As for me, I finally started watching the other VisiPop animated series, Hell of a Boss, which is pretty fun. I'm in the middle of season two.
Yay!
I've only gotten to episode two of season two. I really can't wait to meet the character that's voiced by Michael Cusack. In fact, that's 90% of the reason why I actually started watching, just to get to that character. Also, what else? There was, of course, the weekend Splatfest. You know, team passed, fucking... Goddamn, seeing those results hurt. And, what else? Interesting personal work story. My supervisor just up and left. In the middle of the day. For good, apparently.
Ew.
I don't entirely know why. I was out on my lunch break at the time. The next couple weeks are going to be interesting.
Guess he thought, man, fuck this, I'm out.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Boop, 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 boop. Yeah.
But yeah, that's my life for now. So with the intro formalities out of the way, now we have to get to this gargantuan double stuff, triple stuff, mega stuff, however many stuffs you want to call it, episode of the show.
Folks, this is our WrestleMania. Everything happened.
I guess it's fitting that this is episode 365, because I swear to God, this is enough music to last a year.
Yeah.
This is what you call an event episode. In fact, let me put it like this. So, last I counted, we have a total of like 16 songs we have to talk about. Now, granted, it could have been more. It could have been anywhere from 18 to 20, but I had to make some executive cuts. Like, we're not talking about Phineas this week. Or to put that in further terms, if all this was an album, it would be just long enough that Alex would disqualify it from being in the running for an album roundup.
Yeah, I don't make exceptions that often, but this would classify, but oh, God, yeah. Some things had to get cut. No Phineas, no Knock Loose. A couple other things had to get trimmed out. Sorry. We're full here.
Wait, hang on. What do you mean there was new Knocked Loose?
They put up something a couple days ago.
I thought that was a music video.
Was it something else? Something new that they did? I don't know. I can't keep track of this shit. You know that.
I think it was a music video for a couple songs off You Won't Go Before You're Supposed To. Also, there was news that apparently on a few dates on their upcoming tour, Danny Brown is going to be opening.
Oh, yeah, that happened too. Oh, yeah. Apparently that was a video, which they did that again, which is neat, I suppose. Now I'm wondering if we're going to get some kind of Knock Loose Danny Brown crossover single.
You know what? I would be here for it. But that's for another time. So, let's get into the song lineup that we have right now. As always, there will be the playlist down in the description, and you're gonna have a lot to choose from, a lot to sample, a lot to mark on your calendars. So, first things first, let's talk about my own weird niches of sludge, noise, and doom. So, The Body. Earlier this year, they dropped a collaborative project with an industrial artist named Disfig. But now they've announced another record they're putting out this year, but it's one all on their own. The last such effort on their own being I've Seen All I Need to See in 2021. This one's called The Crying Out of Things. It's due out November 8th, and we have the lead-off single here, End of Line. And much like the band's usual output, it's a pretty abrasive, challenging listen right out of the gate. You have this very strange kind of reverse-ish sounding vocal samples with this kind of weird, kind of creating this weird metallic scraping noise, the aggressively booming but slow trudging drums, the very droning slow guitar percussions, and of course Chip King's very distinctive yet utterly incomprehensible chirping yelp vocal style. It's very noisy and abrasive, so if that's your thing, then go for it. I know this is going to sound weird to say, but like, it's okay. The Body has never really been like my top tier of like noise and sludge outside of one particular album. I forget the name of the album, I just know it had a guest appearance by Lingua Ignota on it, so that's probably 90% of the reason why I like that album, but it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, well, this was very loud, and loud. So I mentioned it's loud because it's very loud. It's very loud and abrasive, very droning, very clipped out, if that makes sense. Not my thing, but I'm sure it's somebody's thing.
Yes, it is. Now, moving on to the next track here, another interesting niche pick out of the gate. So, story time, kids. Once upon a time, there was a death metal band named Mammoth Grinder, spearheaded by a metal drummer named Chris Ulsh. If that name rings a bit of a bell, it should, because he's also the drummer for Texas metal heavyweight's Power Trip. Mammoth Grinder has put out 4 full-length albums, their last being in 2018, and of course in that time Power Trip, you know, kind of surged to many highs, but also experienced the lows of Riley Gale passing away. But now Power Trip is back to touring, and also I guess since he's got it on the brain, Chris has seen fit to bring back Mammoth Grinder for a new EP this November. It's titled Undying Spectral Resonance, dated for November 15th, and while he does have a live lineup for this band, for the actual recording of this EP, everything is all him. All the instruments, I think also all the vocals and stuff. So, yeah, that's gonna be pretty interesting. And so we have the lead-off single here, which is the title track. And if you've never listened to this band before, I'm gonna use this song as a frame of reference, because it's basically death metal power trip. Like, it's got that very cavernous death metal sound that you'd expect from bands like Sivaris or Tumult or the like. But it does have, like, that kind of power trip style of rhythm and tempo. Like, there's definitely this very, like, driving aggressive groove to it, especially in the drums. You got a lot of that particular meaty tremolo guitar style. Again, if you've ever listened to any power trip songs, just think of this as, like, a death metal reskin of something like Executioner's Tax or... yeah, something like that. Especially with that guitar solo towards the end. Gotta be honest, I've enjoyed the Mammoth Grinder stuff I've heard, and this is another pretty damn good one. Just kind of satisfies that nice caveman urge for some really loud, booming-ass death metal, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it's modern classic death metal that sounds like modern classic death metal. It's short and sweet, to the point. Again, not necessarily my thing, but it's someone else's thing, and it's still pretty alright. I'll give it that much.
Alright, fair enough. Now, moving on to the next track here, for October 11th, as we already know, the post-hardcore band Touche Amore is dropping their newest album, Spiral in a Straight Line. A while back, we talked about the lead-off single, and now we have the latest single here called Hal Ashby. I'm not entirely sure what that's a reference to, but at least as far as the song itself. So, tempo-wise, you get, like, this pretty steady series of D-beats and these real halftime rhythms on the chorus, with a bit of this more straightforward tempo in the bridge section that's very clean with a lot of those, like, you know, undistorted guitars and all. Otherwise, the rest of the song, the guitars kind of have that nice, like, very naturalistic sounding overdrive or crunch, whatever you call that effect. Like, it's got distortion, but it's not, like, overly so. It's definitely the kind that fits more well with the very raw emotional appeal of the genre, and even with the vocals as well, kind of having, like, you know, that very emotional shout to them. The lyrics, of course, being these very melancholic musings about the narrator being insecure to the point of self-destructively pushing away those around you. I don't want to talk about it. But, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good Touche Amore song.
Yeah, we call that a crunch tone. It's very, very, it's a very twangy crunch guitar tone. And, oh, yeah, this hits all those fine Midwestern emo feels and vibes real good here. And, yeah, we could add this to the massive pile in October, because, once again, everything big is coming out in October, as was ordained by God. I don't know.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. So, now let's move on to, what are we at, track number 4 here, and this is already, like, a major highlight of sorts in the big scheme of things. So, a couple years back, if I'm remembering right, we talked about a comeback single from the project Autre Nouveau, an alternative R&B, you know, music act, the brainchild of one Arthur Ashen. For context, their last recorded material was back in 2015 with Age of Transparency, which is kind of a big gap for someone who dropped 4 albums between 2010 and 2015. By the way, something random I found out while reading up on this guy. You know, when he was attending college, he was apparently living with Daniel Lopatin?
Oh, that, yeah. You know what? That kind of makes sense. Because I think he was featured in some OPN shit. I don't know. At least that's what I remember. Because that... Yeah, that makes sense.
We'll have to stick a pin in that. I'll have to double check that. So, yeah, but now we're getting the announcement that Autre Nouveau is actually coming back with a whole ass new album, his first in a decade. It's titled Love Guess Who, due out November 1st, and we have the lead single here, About to Lose. Now, the production has that very intensely emotional kind of modern R&B feel to it. At least on the alternative side of things. It's got, like, this really airy set of synth melodies going on, with the percussion being relatively minimal. The kick, some sparse hand claps, but the production does kind of, like, build out on these elements as the emotions become kind of more and more grand and intense, especially in the chorus. The lyrics and the way that Nouveau performs them are very, you know, emotionally intense and melancholic, you know, kind of what I got was, it's kind of like this tale of, like, being on the edge of losing someone that you really love, that made you feel really great in life, and the way, it's all in the performance, really, like, the way everything is sung, especially with a lot of the guest vocals, really does nail kind of, like, the, deep sorrow at play, especially when you pair it with the music video of, everyone kind of lamenting loss at a funeral, you know?
Yeah, I gotta say, it's like this, this definitely you know, that tracker does sell sorrow and pain and dealing with that shit, which, yeah.
Now, moving on to the next track here. Oh God, right, of course. It wouldn't be a major event episode without one of the alarms going off now, would it?
Yes, I'll take over from here. So yeah, that is the Alchemist Alert. Alchemist O'Clock. You fuck up with the regular thing. Okay, anyway, turns out he got a new album coming out this Friday. This Friday, called The Genuine Articulate. The Genuine Articulate. Which, to the track list, the track list got 8 tracks, just 8, so it might be a pretty short record, from what I know. And we got a single here, which features like some, oh, look, Schoolboy Q, titled Ferraris in the Rain. Okay, and I will say that this has this very jazzy flow, this mostly drumless beat, which, of course, it's nice because it's like, do be hitting. And the horns and the things, this very jazzy shit, where it's hitting. Oh, and also, the Alchemist raps. Yes, he does a verse in here. Which, okay, it's not bad. We're drawing the rain, ice my veins, sipping up Bacardi straight, just getting started, holding eight icing on me. I'm on birthday cake, blowing out your candles, they hype the ball to me. I'm the quarterback, I know the screen might be going 60 flats. I'm like, okay, it's basically like, you know, I want to say, sometimes here and there, him just saying shit, and of course, seeing a Schoolboy Q doing his little thing, like, I'm gonna play the grills roll at the gates, that big clock got on my face, the all whites, I got shit to say, it's very simple rap, with a luxurious beat, which come up with this project and look at the checklist, like, I found it via NFR, of course, which had Action Bronson, Big Body Bess, Coming to Machine, Larry June, and Havoc. Okay. Like, once again, it says 8 tracks. I mean, it might be a short record. But 8 is, it'll be either, I don't know, like, maybe 30 minutes or so. I don't know. Anyway, I'm a good time with this shit. Yeah.
Cool. Now, moving on to the next track here. So, next month, we're getting the release of the album Revelator, the newest solo effort from rapper Elucid, one half of the duo Arm & Hammer. That is October 11th. Again, another one for the October pile. We already heard a couple songs off the record, and now we have another single here called The World Is Dog. Now, compared to the previous singles, the beat here is a bit more upbeat by comparison. There's this very driving, drum beat to it. There's the subtle bass synth, you know, kind of a bit more amped up. Of course, the lyrics are kind of like this sort of stream of conscious set of fragmented phrases, but from what I can gather, I think the song is supposed to be like this lyrical play on that phrase, dog eat dog world. Lines like fang bite, dog breath, short leash, pit fight. From this height at this speed, downhill careening, trust none, fear all, small world, devolved, jaws that grind, teeth that tear, shit that binds, kind of lyrics like that. Granted, it sounds much cooler on the record because I am not a super cool underground abstract rap artist. I am just some chuckle fuck in Florida. But yeah, it's a pretty dope jam from Elucid, and a month left to go, I'm pretty interested.
And I gotta say, it's pretty dope. It's really dope. Like, it is like all the dope puns. And I want to say the beat does get more that industrial type shit going on, one of the first is like, okay, this does sound like something you would hear something from a certain group that we know. Speaking of which.
Speaking of which, yeah, so, hey, look at that. Look who else is in the party, too.
Yeah, let me refresh your memory. They were the first this year to do we make, yeah, you know how a few months back we cover some of them remaking Jaquan's Tipsy? and guess what? A song that's number one on the Billboard right now is basically a country, well, a rap country version of Tipsy. That being Shaboozy, the black country artist that's actually number one, making sure the other motherfuckers ain't number one, which I'm fine with.
Yep, that is the thing that's happening. But yeah, so of course the Clipping are here to get in on the fun of episode 365. And we have this new single from them. I'm pretty sure they have an album in the pipeline, possibly. I didn't make a note of whether they did or not, but the track is called Run It, and thankfully it's not a Chris Brown cover.
Oh thank God.
Yeah.
God, yeah. But no, yeah, this is Clipping firmly in their own domain, so the beat kind of starts off with this pretty straightforward-sounding drum loop, almost kind of like, it sounds kind of like an exercise you would do if you were trying to, like, navigate a digital audio workstation for, like, the second or third time, but of course, since it's Clipping, there's more, like, you know, of the noisier stuff that comes in across the beat from these hollow, eerie synths, the kind of thumping techno bass, glitchy sound effects, all coming together in this kind of... I think they use the word cyberpunk somewhere in, like, the news and stuff to describe it. But, yeah, it's got, like, this cyberpunk espionage type of vibe going on. Which kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of did feel that.
Which kind of makes sense because, like, lyrically, you know, Diggs, of course, kind of rides the beat as effortlessly as he always does. And I'm pretty sure the song is about, like, you know, someone getting caught up in, like, the dangerous reality of drug dealing. And just fucking shit is intense out there. Trust me, as with most Clipping tracks, it is very, like, lyrically descriptive. You get the full image in your head as you're listening to it, and it is very, like, almost kind of, like, cinematic in a sense. So, yeah, good shit.
Yep, it is very cinematic to a point, which, you know, from Clipping, which, yeah, it's all good shit.
Clipping don't miss. What else is there to say? Great choice on the, UK grime styled PS1 demo disc beat. If you know what that means, then you know what that means. And yeah, let's just be glad that this was an actual original song and not a cover, because part of me wants to hear him just do the chorus in his cadence and vocal delivery, just how it's very, like, straightforward to the point, just for the hell of it.
Fair enough. All right, mm-hmm. What the fuck is next on the list here?
Okay, so, I guess you're wondering, why am I, I'm bringing up Ace of Rocky again, because I don't know why not, and of course, because, you know, he got that album coming out, which still got no date, just this fall, because of some reason, and a new track, which... Oh, hey, Jermaine.
Is Coleslaw in this?
Yeah.
The track is called Ruby Roll Sweet, and, well, everyone knows we're gonna cover me of the cover art. Alright. I will say this, I listened to the song several times, and Yummy might be shocked to say it. Out of all, like, the ASAP Rocky songs that have been in the rollout, it's probably the one I like the most. I don't know, it could be some lyrics, ASAP, the ASAP Rocky throw we said, like, cut the shit, cut the ties, worth of the wise, who's getting top five? Ha 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 ha, fucking top five. I don't get fresh that bitch, I burn alive, I heard dog talking funny like his Family Guy, caring for niggas like I'm Mary or Bob, made a promise to God, Gosh Drive when you marry the mob, which I want to say that's shots at Drake. Maybe. I don't know. I've been saying this for too long, but I don't know. And I will say J. Cole's verse isn't crap. It's like okay, you got some okay lyrics in here. And in case you're wondering why I say you're also my favorite checker so far, guess who produced it? Oh, look at the time, it's Ahmed O'Clock, he produced this.
Oh, that clock is never late, is it?
No, yeah, no, it's
not. And like I said, this be fucking hits. It's very eerie, haunting, menacing. Basically everything I liked about the beat on Meet the Grams. And what's the other one? And shit, the other one. Fuck, I forgot about the other one he did with a Kendrick.
We'll have to stick a pin in that for later.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the point, like this song, Song Ain't Too Half Bad, J. Cole's verses, it's not terrible, the beat is great, there you go.
Alright, nice. Now, let's move on to the next track here. So, again, in the October pile, October 11th, the newest studio album from Opeth, The Last Will and Testament. Which is kind of being structured as this narrative conceptual thing. So, of course, the lead-off single we got was called some weird-ass symbol, and then followed by one. And now we have single number two here, which is weird-ass symbol, followed by the number three. Wait, hang on. Is that how counting works?
It's actually, I found this out by watching interviews about it. It's pronounced paragraph.
Paragraph three. As single number two.
Yeah, because nothing makes sense here.
No, but you know what? You know what does make sense to me? Good tunes. And this is some pretty good shit. The guitar is having the kind of intricate prog death licks and passages that you would really want out of peak Opeth, that really satisfying grooving tempo, a lot of the very, like, elegant dramatic strings playing over top of everything, and of course punctuating the more intense moments. Not much to say here, but it is all pretty damn solid, even if this is a song that, unlike the first one, has no screams in it.
Yep. Nice blend of heavy riffs, a lot of groove on here. Again, no real growling sections like we heard on the first paragraph, as it were. But still very solid on here for what will likely be a strong middle section of the overall story, I guess we could say here. Pretty good. Also, Mark, I think the track you were thinking of is We Cry Together.
Yeah. That was it.
All right. Now moving on to the next track here. So, fun fact, this past weekend, Korn rolled into my neck of the woods. And of course, alongside them on this tour was the likes of Gojira and Spirit Box. So, pretty funny timing then that we're talking about a brand new single from Spirit Box this week. Their newest release is called Soft Spine, and ooh, man, this is the fire. This one rips right from the start. Just really aggressive, chunky guitar chugs, sweeps, those kind of string scrapes. The tempo has that kind of bouncy metalcore groove to it. You know, you nod, you bang your head. Seriously, the guitarists here have some real meat on their bones. Just some real nasty chords and distortion. Really discordant noodling and leads. Just, you're making the stank face when you're listening to it. That's really all that needs to be said. It's the good shit.
Oh, yeah, this is that good heavy shit here. Nice bouncy riff groove for Courtney to bounce her vocals off of. And they are especially visceral on here. All the leads to the rallying cry of, "Your God will start you when you die!" Oh, that's good stuff.
Great stuff.
But that's not the heaviest track we have here, is it?
No. Shockingly. So, let's move on to the next track. Apparently, it looks like the guys in Whitechapel also got some shit cooking in the oven. There's a new album. We don't know the title or even when it's released. We just know it's coming. So, we have a new single here, of course, called A Visceral Wretch. And, man. We know that they've been putting out some more sort of nuanced, dynamic records as of late. But, man, we're getting that old school Whitechapel in this. Just ugh, this, that intro is fucking nasty with the detuned tremolos. Phil Bozeman's absolutely guttural, just bellow, and then eventually giving way to the furious deathcore assault of, like, the D beats, the double kicks, even more of those disgusting guitar tremolos, the, you know, the good deathcore bliss. Of course, you get a lot of that kind of, like, horror movie ambiance in between the major sections of the song, offering a nice reprieve between all the absolute brutality at play. Some really filthy breakdowns to complete the package, especially that 6-8 section to close out the song. You know, sometimes you just gotta throw back to the classics, man.
Yeah, this isn't just heavy. This is nasty heavy. This is stank face, kind of heavy. It is absolutely guttural and visceral in ways that it honestly shouldn't be. And yeah, it's definitely more old school Whitechapel in what it's going for. Although I do have to wonder, is that thing with Phil Bozeman's voice real, or is that done with, like, pitch shifting? Because he does the... Is that natural, or is he just having it, like, pitched down in post-production? Either way, I like it. I just want to know how it's being done.
I was wondering about that, too. But wait! In terms of heaviness, there's more!
Oh, Lord.
So, over the past summer, Mastodon had been on a co-headlining tour with Lamb of God, that being the Ashes of Leviathan tour. And so, they recently, you know, capped off the actual run, and to further put a nice little bow on all this, the two of them hopped over to Mastodon's studio in Atlanta, and cranked out a collaborative jam called Floods of Triton.
Because fuck it, why not?
And God, you have no idea how happy this track makes me, because goddamn is this just like a beast of a jam worthy of its title. Take it from a guy who's seen both of these bands live at varying points. You get, listening to this song, just the full titanic force of two metal giants at their peak. The song mixing in just about every musical hallmark of the two band styles that you could want. The Mastodon drumming style with, like, the super jittery intricate fills and fast grooves. The distinctive vocal stylings of both Randy Blythe and Troy Sanders. The distinct hammer-on pull-off guitars that you get from, like, you know, the Mastodon style. Their unique approaches to guitar soloing. It's all fucking there, and it flows very well. Nothing is fighting each other on this track. The two beasts in the studio are working in perfect harmony, like they've done this all the fucking time. Yes!
Yeah, it's just a wonderful collaboration for a wonderful combination. Equal parts sludgy and grooving from start to end, and before this, I didn't know how much I needed to hear Randy Blythe on Mastodon riffs. This is just a lot of fun. Now let me look at my notes and see what we have. Oh, God, fuck, no.
Oh, the fun part is over. Now we have to do terrible shit.
This is... I actually have this in my notes as, oh God, fuck no.
So, yeah, we're going to get into more popular mainstream stuff now, but, like, goddamn, Katy Perry is just not having a good time with this album cycle, is she?
Nope.
Oh, no. Like, the VMAs happened.
Yeah.
Something's happened on
there. Yeah, no one cares.
Bad joke incoming. That Katy Perry C-bomb was the second worst thing to happen on September 11th.
I feel bad for laughing at that. But, yeah, so...
It's been 22.3 years. That's South Park lore. It's applicable to make bad jokes about it now.
Yeah. It's technically true, but, yeah, God, the whole Woman's World fallout, falling off the charts as quickly as it did, while it was totally satire, as Katy Perry says, to the fact that the follow-up single apparently had a music video whose filming evidently broke environmental regulations, and now, as the headline from Stereo Gum itself says, not even Doechii can save this Katy Perry album. So the single here is called I'm His, He's Mine. The album's dropping this Friday, so get in the bunkers. First of all, the keyboard melody. It's a sample pretty much just straight up from the song Gypsy Woman by Crystal Waters, which, if you need a reminder, was a top 10 hit in 1991 and became an essential standard bearer of house music as a genre, and it's been sampled many times. I don't know why it's here. It doesn't help the song in any way, especially with how fucking just boring these two are on it. Like, look, I don't follow Doechii very closely, but, like, if this was your first time hearing her on anything, I really can't imagine it would get you to listen to anything else she does. And Katy Perry here just, you know, out here acting like she's really gonna steal Yo Man when she can barely steal top spots on the charts anymore. Ugh. Why?
Yeah, I will say this was something here, Doechii. Well, that's a shame.
Putting the honestly really badly directed video aside, this song is just really bad. Like, the beats and the chords and the sample loop just repeat over and over and over again with no actual progression. Katie's vocal delivery is clearly going for something like Dua Lipa crossed with Megan Thee Stallion or Nicki Minaj, which obviously doesn't work. And Doechii is there too, I guess.
Doechii is there. Which...
if the singles were this bad, how bad is the rest of the album?
I don't want to know.
Somebody hold me, I am terrified.
Anyway, let's move on to something that's actually, like, reasonably hype. So, of course, again, to throw onto the pile, The Weeknd. Finally announced the actual follow-up to the masterpiece that was Dawn FM. The new album is going to be titled Hurry Up Tomorrow. No release date, we just know the title, the artwork, and we have the lead-off single here called Dancing in the Flames. So, I'm just gonna say, production-wise, it kind of feels like it pulls back a bit from the particularly, specific mood of Dawn FM into something that definitely feels way more pop and mainstream. Like, it's got this nice bouncy tempo to just kind of groove and bop to. The synth melodies are pretty melodically bright and upbeat. The lyrics, you know, kind of have, like, a certain, weird sort of dour romantic vibe to them. Like, in the sense that they describe a romance in terms of kind of, like, surviving a car wreck together, hence dancing in the flames of the wreckage. So, I mean, it's a solid lead single. I'm curious what the next one would be in kind of like the deeper picture of the album, if there's anything else going on, or if this is just him kind of like streamlining things a bit, but either way, not bad.
Yeah, it's a song. Anyway, the song to me is, it's all right. I mean, I know I wasn't expecting anything, I mean, like Dawn Family, like the single, like, it was gonna be a single track. And this is something that will be, you know, a pop single, which I'm cool with. I mean, I hope we get better deep cuts, but this one sounds fine. This one sounds fine.
Honestly, this is pleasant. Like, it's a strong beat and groove with soulful melodies to it. It's just pleasant R&B pop with the usual addition of Abel's starkly ironic lyrical delivery. I like it. Pretty good. Also, the first tease of the song we got was from the new iPhone commercials last week, and apparently this was all shot on iPhone cameras, so neat. Count me in for more, I guess.
Cross-promotional strategy. All right.
Okay.
What the fuck is next?
Okay, so let me set the date. It was 9/11 of this year. Maybe it's a normal Wednesday. Tuesday night was Wednesday night. Wednesday night. Of course, I was talking about on Twitter. Of course, B-Memes are there, but no one cares about that. Or I don't know. But we don't care about that until those very two words dropped. Kendrick dropped. unexpected. We didn't most people feed another Kendrick track to come up. I was like, Kendrick, get on track, and I'm singing my soul. And guess what happened? And the thing is, this track is still on Instagram.
Yeah.
There's no official title.
Yeah. I mean, there are YouTube rips of it.
Yeah.
If as far as I know, I'm probably just going to call it just the untitled Instagram song, but I think a lot of the commentators out there are calling it something like Watch the Party Die.
Or, yeah, or just The Party Died.
It's like, God, what is he going to rap about now? Is it going to turn out that Drake was secretly responsible for the Manhattan Project?
Well, we do know one of the targets in here. An accomplice of one, Mr. Toronto himself. A certain DJ who doesn't want this to end.
Oh, yes. Mr. Livingston Allen, a.k.a. DJ Academics. That's not your real name, nigga.
Yeah, just to say real quick, Double XL, shouldn't you know better than to take DJ Academics at his word?
Oh, these fucking people.
Mm. So anyway, let me think of this track. Isn't there a Drake diss? Well, not technically, this is actually a diss towards mainly towards the whole industry, the conversation about industry how things go. Basically how like people perpetuate this shit and they're going to further things like how it's a lot of shit going on. It's a lot of shit going on, which. Because it's like, they party more than bitches tell me what you working for. They go up by scamming, get chip over this credit card, influence talking down, cause not with the basic shit, but they hate me, they hate the man I represent. Type of man that never dick ride cause I want a favor. The man that resides in patience to where soldiers at. The one that's lost it all and learned to learn from that. Which basically is like, okay, for most of us it's like, okay, which, even says like can't blame him today. Ain't got to work with how many bitches hard do all you niggas. We'll take all y'all for nip. I can't be proud of you niggas. Which more people, yeah, that those words are, you know, they are ain't plus academics because like I remember Nipsey Hussle saying some shit about academics ain't right and well he was right.
Yeah, he was.
We'll come back to Kendrick later because. I think we know how this whole saga is going to end. It's going to end on the biggest bang possible.
Yep. Oh, and who produced this? According to Genius, yes, Genius got this. This is from Soundwave, Anchor Trico Plus One, Pasquet, and of course Jack Antonoff. Yes, Jack gets off. Yes, Jack gets off. I'm doing Kendrick.
Easy money. Easy money.
Tracks.
Okay, so what have we crossed so far on the territory? So we had like a Train of Voo coming back after a decade. Clipping. We have Opeth material. Whitechapel throwing it back to the old days. Mastodon Lamb of God in the studio. Kendrick shadow dropping on Instagram. What else is there? What else could there possibly be? What is... Could there be anything bigger? Could there be?
Folks, the clock hit zero. Okay, in order to articulately talk about this situation, we have to do it chronologically in the moment. So... Linkin Park reunion tour and album!
That is absolutely one of the biggest stories to happen in just the year total.
Yeah. And
the countdown clock count down to zero, then count back up to 100 again, apparently. And it came with a whole bunch of news, and even a whole ass live stream concert. So, here's what we know. So, Linkin Park has officially dated November 15th for the release of their big comeback album, From Zero. And of course, in the live stream concert, we got to see the band in action, with the biggest news coming from the new vocalist, the person who is being tasked with filling the shoes of the late, great Chester Bennington. And that, my friends, leads us to the introduction of new vocalist Emily Armstrong, whose main prior credential is singing for a band called Dead Sarah, which I will admit I've never listened to. In addition, while Mike Shinoda, Joe Hahn, Brad Delson, and Phoenix are back in the fold, evidently it seems like drummer Rob Borden is not a part of this reunion, in this case being replaced by a new guy named Colin Britton. Britain?
Yeah, the details is that he didn't really feel up to doing much of anything with Linkin Park going forward. So they hired a new drummer who was actually mostly a producer, but, you know, he can play drums, so it fits.
All right. Noted. So, with all that news, of course, the biggest thing that we have to talk about here, first of all, is the band's latest single, the first taste of what this current incarnation of the band is. It's called The Emptiness Machine. And so, Alex, I'm going to let you start on the song first, because I'm curious what your frame of mind is on this.
Okay, so I actually have to talk about the live concert thing they did in California to lead up to it. There were no signs that this was going to happen, aside from people who were actually there and being bussed to the soundstage. Did not expect it, did not see it coming, did not even expect new material of any kind. Hearing the song live for the first time, I didn't really pick up on what was going on. I just realized, holy crap, there's a new singer and a new drummer. What's going on here? There's also a new guitar player because Brad Delson isn't going to be touring, although he's credited on the album. But, you know, well, that is what it is. Hearing the song, you know, the studio version when it dropped after the concert was over, honestly, I like it. It's not too flashy. It's very stable and steady. I would call it a very solid radio entry. Something to get everyone's feet wet after, it's been 7 years now. It's been a very long time. I like it. I think it's solid. Some other folks are saying, it's not really all that great. No, trust me. It's been enough time. We can all say One More Light was what it was. I didn't like it. I still don't like it. Big improvement. They're not doing, like, pop stuff on here. I dig it. Emily's vocal delivery from, you know, the live concert, she has what I would call, like, a very strong mid-range screaming vocal range. You know, not super guttural like, you know, Courtney LaPlante. Not super high-piercing. Just right in that good mid-range. It works in the live setting. There were some cracks every now and then, but, you know, that happens. It works in the studio as well. Like, you can tell she's really pushing herself to emote in the chorus. You know, as a lead-off single, yeah, I like it. I think it's pretty all right. I enjoyed hearing it, you know, when I knew what it was and what was going on here when they announced, hey, we're doing a little mini tour in some cities. We got a new album coming out in November, which, yeah, excited for that. My interest, my excitement, it was just, woo, all the way up in that moment, riding a very, very, very big high.
Have a good time.
Fair enough.
And then the details started coming out, and... fuck!
Okay, so before we get to that, though, I'm just going to insert my take on the song, so... There's a very specific frame of reference I understand you have to go in with this particular song. Like, you have to be able to take it on its own merits, while also it being like a musical declaration of, we're back. Like, the closest comparison point I can kind of think of here is, this kind of reminds me of living through, you know, live, the weeks where Trevor Noah first took over for The Daily Show. That used to be some shit I watched all the time. So you have to be able to take it as an entity in its own merits, and looking at it like that, the song is okay to me. I gave it a couple listens. I can say that Emily definitely carries herself pretty solidly as a vocalist. Solid hard rock gruffness, decent melodic performances, but the thing is, for me, was this the right track to lead off all this with? For me, the vibe I get is that this isn't really like, the momentum it has doesn't really feel like big comeback lead single. This feels more like album deep cut that, you know, might be pretty good to certain ears, that got kind of over-generously promoted to the big leagues when maybe something with a bit more bombast could have been used, something that had more time to season in the oven. So basically, if I may possibly incorrectly use a wrestling metaphor here, I feel like this is kind of the Roman Reigns of comeback singles.
I wouldn't go that far. Like, remember, that was years of audience rejection.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That's just the closest metaphor I could think of, and I mean, I guess there's nothing as bad on here as suffering succotash, son.
Oh, no. Again, I get what they were trying to do, something very steady with catchy hooks to get people, you know, aware of what's going on. It worked. It charted on the Hot 100 at number 21, which is their highest charting single since New Divide, which was 15 years ago. So clearly it worked in that regard.
And now we have to talk about the fallout of it all.
Oh, God, I'm so fucking tired of talking about this shit.
Okay, so where do we even start? So, of course, when the song released, there was the reactions to the song itself. You know, I thought it was good. I thought it was great. I thought it was eh. Linkin Park always sucked. You know, that kind of takes. But then controversy came. There's one person in particular who at first was not very thrilled about the vocalist reveal, who seems to have some problems with Emily herself. And believe it or not, this is not, in fact, just some shrieking incel on the internet pissed off that a woman is fronting a popular band. The criticism came from none other than Cedric Bixler-Zavala, who, as we all know, is from the Mars Volta. And it's also his wife, Chrissy Carnell Bixler. Very specifically, that Armstrong seems to have some connections to the Church of Scientology. And if you need a reminder as to why that would be a problem, keep in mind that a fellow Scientologist is Danny Masterson.
Oh, no.
Convicted of sexual abuse towards Chrissy herself. Again, that is what the entirety of the last Mars Volta album was basically about. A musical critique of the Church of Scientology for how it protects predators and, you know, just shitty people of this nature. And if you're wondering why the Masterson stuff came out in particular, apparently Armstrong was present at Masterson's arrangement in support of him. So, let me read just Carnell Bixler's statement, at least as quoted by Metal Sucks here. Linkin Park's new lead singer is a hardcore Scientologist who's supporting convicted serial rapist both in and out of court. Emily Armstrong is a true believer of the Scientology cult/criminal organization that engages in human and child trafficking, child and elder abuse, the cover-ups of countless essays on children and adults. Also is a true believer of L. Ron Hubbard, who said homosexuals are sexual deviants on the same level as pedophiles, and all homosexuals should be sent off to a leper colony. You can read all about Scientologists' views on LGBT community in Science of Survival or Dianetics. Not very happy about that at all.
Oh boy.
So, very harsh words. There was even another statement where Carnell Bixler went on to invoke the presence of Chris Cornell in regards to all of this stuff. Also pointing out how questionable it was to have connections to Scientology, considering that Chester himself was a survivor of SA as a child. God, that's always terrible to think about. So that was a whole thing. Not necessarily a good look. And, eventually, of course, this prompted, Emily Armstrong to make a statement herself to respond to, you know, Danny, to the call-outs in regards to her association with Danny Masterson and all of that. Of course, she made some plain text posts to her social media accounts, pretty much stating her position at the time, as it says. So, quote, "I'm new to so many of you, and I wanted to clear the air about something that happened a while back. Several years ago, I was asked to support someone I considered a friend at a court appearance, and went to one early hearing as an observer. Soon after, I realized I shouldn't have. I always try to see the good in people, and I misjudged him. I have never spoken with him since. Unimaginable details emerged, and he was later found guilty. To say it as clearly as possible, I do not condone abuse or violence against women, and I empathize with the victims of these crimes." And so, of course, that was her statement. Fucking Scientology.
Okay. I have been dealing with this for about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks now, trying to go through as much information as I can possibly find through the Linkin Park subreddit, through another Discord server that I'm in, through just about everywhere, trying to find, in plain speak, high-quality sources, trying to just sort everything out. And I'll come back around to this in a moment. Okay, I've a couple of things to note. Scientology is fucked. Like, once you're in, you're not getting out. There are people everywhere who, from what I understand, basically try and scope out anybody who leaves or attempts to leave and tries to ruin their lives. Leah Remini, hello. From what I've been able to gather through, again, higher quality sources, Emily Armstrong is a queer woman, which would go against those views. From what I found in a post from the BBC, quote, "Armstrong has never publicly commented on her relationship with Scientology, but several of Dead Sarah's lyrics suggest criticism and rejection of Scientology's teachings." Now, that's from a BBC article. I don't know if that can be, you know, officially verified outside of, you know, what one's interpretation can be. I also know that Chester Bennington's eldest son is not too happy with all this, though he also hasn't been happy with the band, or Mike Shinoda, or Chester's wife in a very long time.
Okay. So
take that how you will.
Oh, yeah, I almost forgot about that.
There's also, yeah, and from what I understand, Cedric weren't too happy about Emily's statements about this whole thing. And I'm going to be honest, this is going to sound really selfish of me, like I'm just trying to dismiss everything. I'm not. I understand there's a lot of shit to deal with here. I am just so tired of what I'm going to call parasocial piling on for everything. It is just a bad thing to have to deal with in your head when you have to see people trying to basically grandstand their statement, saying, "Oh, if you so and so this, then you so and so that." Like, people, life itself is already hard enough. Sometimes we don't want to have to deal with X, Y, and Z when it does not apply to A, B, or C. If she feels repentant and apologetic for everything that's gone on, and she wants to make good on past transgressions, she's in her right to do that privately. We don't need to know any of this shit. As it stands, we know too much about everyone and everything, and we don't need to know everything about everyone. If she wants to make good on past transgressions to better herself, let that happen in private. We don't need to know all of it. We don't need to see all of it. Keep all that shit separate and away from public life and out of the music, then fine. Listen, I know Tom Cruise is a whacked up Scientologist. I saw Top Gun Maverick 3 times in theaters. Was there any talk about Scientology in the movie? No. I understand there's a lot of shit to deal with him. I know he's crazy. But if I'm listening to an album or watching a movie, I'm not going to think twice about what somebody who might be involved with something is thinking about, unless, you know, they're viscerally reprehensible, like Mel Gibson or Kanye West. Mm-hmm.
Or Nobuhiro Watsuki.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying separate art from the artist. That's not what I'm trying to imply here. I am just tired of all of the fucking bullshit. I'm just tired. I want people to better themselves. I am a believer, as naive as it sounds, people can better themselves if they choose to do so. If she wants to better herself, if she chooses to better herself outside of all of this to make up for it, let her. In private. We don't need to know all of this. I am lightheaded trying to talk about all of this right now. Fuck.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yep.
I mean, I can't really add on more to that. All I'm going to say here is that, one, obviously I'm not a fan of the church at Scientology. But second, it's not really my business to tell anyone involved in this how to deal with the controversy. Because, again, if we're talking parasocial relationships, I'm not friends with the Bixlers. I don't know Emily Armstrong. I know I hate Danny Masterson for what he did. But putting my... this is just not, like, my battle to fight. That's ultimately, you know, what it comes down to. And yeah, they did have their big statements in response, so pretty much that's where things stand right now. I wonder if this is also gonna hold by the time that the second single comes out.
Well, I mean, they've already started doing shows. They did their show in LA last week. They did a show in Brooklyn on Monday. The crowd response, overwhelmingly positive. So take that how you will.
Okay, fair enough. I guess fair enough. I guess I go show you that the internet ain't real life. Well, y'all know that.
No, we've been trying to say that for over a decade. The internet is not reality. God,
I mean, sometimes it is it, but then it starts to bleed over into reality. Look at you, JD Vance.
Can this fucker go to prison too?
Hopefully so.
Get away from my couch.
I hope it's a Florida prison. Because that would be really ironic. Because, fun fact, you know what there's a very high population of in my home state? Haitians.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful people. Shut the fuck up, couch fucker.
Give him my arms. Don't look my arms like that. Or my chair. Leave my bed alone, too.
Alright, so that pretty much covers all the new song discussion. We're like an hour in at this point.
Fuck!
Yep, and we're still not done.
Yeah, we actually have to take a bit of a break, because I gotta fucking pee. So, yeah. So, here's the musical interlude, and when we come back, we have the big news topic, so stay tuned.
Don't touch that dial, kids. We'll be right back.
And we're back. So, we have about 5 news topics to discuss here. So, comparatively less stuff than the songs. So, let's get right into this first one. And this is a bit of a brand synergy once again, as we have weeb shit to talk about. Because we are in September right now. So, we're coming up on October, which means the premieres of all the, the fucking fall anime season?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's some pretty notable stuff coming up. Personally for me, my number one most anticipated being the anime adaptation of Dawn to Dawn. Sadly, I didn't get to catch the theatrical screening, but I'm sure it was pretty good.
I saw it. It was a lot of fun.
And as a fan of the manga, I am hyped. But, of course, there's one that's probably going to be getting just as much, possibly, no, definitely more attention because of Basic Logic. That, of course, being Dragon Ball Daima, the newest television installment of the Dragon Ball franchise. Sadly, the last one to feature any involvement from the late Akira Toriyama. He will sadly, of course, not be alive to witness how the world responds to it. But, I mean, I've been seeing some of the preview stuff, and it does look like it could be, you know, pretty solidly fun. Apparently, it's kind of returning back to, like, a lot of the afterlife supernatural elements from, like, just kind of, like, throwing back to, like, OG Dragon Ball in a lot of ways overall. So, that could be a fun time. And, of course, we recently got the news of the newest trailer, which actually showcases the opening theme. Which is called Jaka John, and was apparently produced and composed by Zed. What?
Wait. Okay.
Zed as in electronic producer Zed?
Yes, that's Zed.
Yeah, so, specifically, as a whole, it was composed by the DJ producer Zed. The lyrics were written by Yukinojo Mori, who has worked on several opening themes for Dragon Ball, including, of course, Chala Head Chala. And apparently, it also features the involvement of a singer-songwriter unit named C&K, who were singing the song at the request of Zed himself. So, I mean, the trailer does give us a snippet of the song, and I mean, it's really weird, because, like, it definitely sounds like a Zed beat, but you do hear, like, you know, the Japanese vocals over top and the lyrics and all, so, I mean, in a weird way, it kind of fits, maybe? Sort of? I don't know. Yeah. I'll say this. Compared to the last time we had to talk about a North American artist doing an opening theme for an anime adaptation of a popular franchise in the year of our Lord 2024... this is better than Youngblood, just saying.
I mean, the bar isn't very high, but yeah, hearing like a Zed EDM beat with all this feels off in a way.
Yeah, just like, I don't know, again, especially because, you know, like if you're hearing lyrics sung by the same guy who wrote... well, okay, lyrics from the same guy who wrote Chala Head Chala, and again, indisputable classic of anime OPs, just like, it's a really weird feeling. But, I mean, again, I'm still looking forward to the show. I don't know, it just looks like fun. So that's really all I have to say about it. So,
well, it's not crappy.
Moving on. Yeah, moving on to the next topic. So... apparently, Jane's Addiction's been around doing reunion stuff. Not for much longer, though.
Ew.
So, yeah, to get everyone caught up to speed, recently they had a reunion tour. They started one with, of course, the classic lineup, which, for context, is, of course, Perry Farrell, Dave Navarro, Stephen Perkins, and Eric Avery. Apparently, it also yielded a new song, the first from them since, like, the 90s. Or at least the first with that lineup. I don't know. I think I might have skipped over it that week. And they even said that a new album was likely impending. None of that is happening. You might be wondering why. Well, as the Stereo Gum piece here humorously says, thank you, Scott LaPatine. Is this going to ruin the tour?
Spoiler, yes it did. But we'll get there in a moment.
So... the band was performing, this past Friday at, they were performing in Boston at, the Leader Bank Pavilion. Specifically, they were in the middle of the song Ocean Size, which, they didn't really get to finish because, according to all the fan videos, like, fully confirmed video evidence and everything, at some point, Perry Farrell decided to pitch a shit fit. He decided to scream fuck you at Dave Navarro, body checked him, and at one point even threw a punch. before all the crew members decided to hold him back, and everyone exited the stage. Keep in mind, they were also just a few songs away from finishing the set. They didn't even play their big hits, like Been Caught Stealing. And apparently it was also Stephen Perkins' birthday.
Oh, wow. Happy birthday! It's a fight!
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah. That is not great. There is a telling note in here from Creative Loafing from their show in Tampa a couple weeks ago. I'll just read it right here. Quote, Pharrell launched into many nonsensical rants about cow pastures, mushrooms, surfing, living in Florida, and arguing with his brother about politics, among other undecipherable topics. Chugging from a full bottle of wine throughout the performance, one almost got the feeling that this wasn't the first bottle he'd uncorked that night.
Oh, boy.
At one point during one of his ramblings, Navarro deliberately cranked out a loud, piercing chord on his guitar as almost to silence Pharrell and get the show back on track. This guy is 65 years old. What the fuck is he doing chugging wine on stage?
Yeah, just...
That's something a white mama do.
Yeah, I'm just looking at, like, all the details here. Like, apparently there was other incidents, like, when they played in New York City at Rooftop at Pier 17, apparently Pharrell said, like, I have to be honest with you, something's wrong with my voice, I just can't get the notes out all of a sudden. Here's a really funny post from just someone's Instagram account. No, wait, it's... Oh, God, someone posting on Threads? Threads, really? You're using Threads on ironically.
I mean, people are on there for reasons.
I forgot I got a Threads account. I forgot I got a Blue Sky account. I don't be using social media a lot these days.
I just do it for bullshit nowadays.
I just promote shit.
Anyway.
So, from Alice Teeple on Threads... Perry Farrell needs to dry the fuck out stat. Tonight's Jane's Addiction show in NYC was disgraceful. The drunken 5-minute rant was rough. It's clear he isn't a well man. The rest of the band sounded great. It was genuinely cool to see Dave Navarro play. But let me put it this way. Every pit photographer at the show had the same look of abject horror or yikes. Out of the hundreds of concerts I've shot, this was easily the worst. Oh, okay, so I guess she's a concert photographer. That would explain it.
Yeah. Ew, okay.
Oh, God, yeah, I saw that whole statement about fucking chugging the bottle and fucking politics and shit.
Then we got a word from Perry's wife, Eddie, on Instagram, who basically wrote up everything in a very strange manner, almost like a PR piece, which was weird.
I was going to say, this looks more like a class assignment with how it's laid out. Like, when you're being educated on... Okay, so I forget how old most of us probably were when we first learned about the idea of who, what, when, where, why, and how.
I think I was, like, 6 when I learned that.
I forgot.
I mean, grade school probably seems like a good enough indicator.
I know about the showing method, but that's it. I know about the showing method back then, but... Yeah.
Fair enough. So, okay, as she describes it, just to read her words clearly, rather than speculating, I thought to post a first-person account of what happened on stage with Jane's Addiction last night at the Lender Pavilion in Boston. Who? Perry Farrell and Dave Navarro. How? Clearly there had been a lot of tension and animosity between the members, the magic that made the band so dynamic. Well, the dynamite was lit. Perry got up in Dave's face and body-checked him. Why? Perry's frustration had been mounting night after night. He felt that the stage volume had been extremely loud and his voice was being drowned out by the band. Perry had been suffering from tinnitus and a sore throat every night, but when the audience in the first row started complaining up to Perry, cussing at him that the band was planning too loud and that they couldn't hear him, Perry lost it. When? The band sang the song Ocean before Perry was ready and did the count-off. The stage volume was so loud at that point that Perry couldn't hear past the boom and the vibration of the instruments, and by the end of the song he wasn't singing. He was screaming just to be heard. So who won the fight? Why, Eric Avery, of course. While Dave was keeping Perry at arm's length to de-escalate the situation, Dan rushed over to de-escalate as well by holding Perry back. Dave walked away to take his guitar off. Eric walked up to Perry upstage in the dark behind Dan, put Perry in a headlock, and punched him in the stomach 3 times. Kevin, crew member with a long hair with long hair... Wait, Kevin, crew member with a long hair with long hair... Okay. Pulled Eric away. Then Eric nonchalant walked off the front to stage to apologize to audience for the show ended early. I'm sorry. I know I was just kind of glazing over some of the grammar mistakes and all, but at this point, this is starting to read like it was written by Charlie from Always Sunny. What was the aftermath? Dave still looked handsome and cool in the middle of a fight. Perry was a crazed beast for the next half an hour. He finally did not calm down, but did break down and cried and cried. Eric, well, he either didn't understand what de-escalation meant or took advantage of the situation and got in a few cheap shots on Perry. Well, that's my first-person account narrative of what happened. Take a look at the video yourself. Hashtag Jane's Addiction. Hashtag a man can only be pushed so far. Hashtag Dave took the high road. Hashtag cheap shot. Hashtag Leader Bank Pavilion. Hashtag Mother Eagle. Jesus Christ, how many fucking hashtags do you need? This is
taxes. They'll be lower, son. The Democratic vote is the right thing to do, Philadelphia. So do. This doesn't make any sense.
Seriously, last time I saw this many hashtags was when Jared Threaten was on Twitter. There's an anniversary throwback for you, kids.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, all that was shit that happens. Also, for some reason, Liam Gallagher decided to have an opinion about this. Shut the fuck up, Liam.
Shut up.
Why are you
pissed off, you motherfucker? Here? Nobody asked you.
Nobody.
Let him here.
And pretty much then, soon after, the band shared an apology on social media, announcing that the show they were supposed to play the Sunday after that whole incident was canceled. And eventually, it just seemed like the entire tour was called off.
Yep.
In other words, they showed their true nature. That's the only song I know from Jane's Addiction.
Yeah.
Maybe because of Torque.
Well, I'm just going to say this here from Martin Lenoble, who was in Porno for Pyros with Perry Farrell at the same time, who said, quote, "Fuck Perry. He's been a sad chill of a human being for most of his life. No spine, just a preacher without any capacity for growth." Which, yeah, it's bad.
Very. So, yeah, that was a whole turbulent thing for people who were big into rock music in the 90s. But I'm sure there's probably not going to be any other turbulent music news that we have to talk about for people who are big into major 90s rock bands now, is there? As you can tell by that very obvious lead-in, unfortunately, that is the next news topic. So, no way to sugarcoat this. Just going to say, pretty much directly from this Rolling Stone piece, as John Blistein pretty much puts it, Dave Grohl revealed that he fathered a child outside of his marriage.
Eep.
Oh boy.
So, as he said on Instagram, Mr. Grohl, and I quote, "I've recently become the father of a new baby daughter born outside of my marriage. I plan to be a loving and supportive parent to her. I love my wife and my children, and I am doing everything I can to regain their trust and earn their forgiveness. We're grateful for your consideration toward all the children involved as we move forward together."
Yeah, what the fuck? Also, this is apparently the second time he has cheated on a wife in the past?
Oh.
Again, what the fuck?
Okay.
Yeah, marital infidelity. So that's how you know Dave Grohl is really living the rock star lifestyle.
Okay, look, I know we just did a whole thing about parasocial judgment, but this is just common sense judgment here. What the fuck?
Yeah, like, this is almost as bad as, apparently there's some weird, there's apparently a controversy involving the Foo Fighters associating themselves with AIDS denialism.
I was not aware of that.
I might have to double check it, but I think it involves some very questionable charity donations. But yeah, that, marital infidelity. Although I suppose the only upside in all of this is that at least he didn't have the existence of these children revealed via a series of diss tracks from someone that hates his guts.
Yeah, that's true. At least, I mean, at least he said.
He said,
okay, well, God did it. I cheated my wife. I fathered a kid. I did it. It was me. I'm trying to beg her forgiveness. Yeah, I know I'm getting my ass kicked. I kind of deserve it, but okay. Hands in the air.
Just imagine there being a fucking Kendrick fucking diss track about this.
Hers was conflicted.
Exactly. Now, yeah, that's a whole thing, so do with that as you will, cope with it as you please. Now, moving on to the next news topic here. Apparently it's football season.
Yes, it is. Everybody's getting hurt, nobody's having fun, and nothing makes sense. So, you know, it's the usual football season.
Drinking!
Yeah, that sounds about right. And, of course, everything ultimately culminates in the 2025 Super Bowl, which is being played February 9th, and will be broadcast live from New Orleans. So, of course, as always, we gotta be prepared for the usual mix of stuff, from advertisements to advertisements to... I'm pretty sure they actually play some football at some point.
And some Doritos. And
I'm going to Disney World.
And movie trailers and all that good stuff.
And, of course, the annual Super Bowl halftime show. So who's actually playing this year? I'm curious.
What would it be? Says here, a Wookiee! It's Kendrick Lamar.
Ah!
oh, Lord, man.
He's on the headline, the halftime show. You know, it's in my Apple Music, and you know, it's produced by Rock Nation, all that shit going on. What is it going on? Which, you know, kind of makes sense. Right now, he's on fire now, considering what happened this week and the last couple of months.
I just want to point out something really funny. I saw this, it was this funny TikTok post from a guy. He was like, he was kind of doing like an impersonation of Kratos from like the original God of War game specifically. It was like, Kendrick, get all of America to chant A minor, and my life shall be yours.
Yeah.
Oh.
It'll be the second time he's done this shit. Consider, well, you know, the whole thing in 2022. You know, we did the headline with, you know, the Dre, Snoop Dogg, Mary J. Blige, all that going on. Which should be all good. Like, all right, this should be some good shit. And then I heard some of your motherfuckers complaining about me talking about shit. Like, the way you bring it, like, okay. Okay, the Super Bowl is in New Orleans this year. And then you got some motherfuckers going out, well, how come they didn't get somebody from this city to do this shit? Like, of course they bring up somebody like Lil Wayne. And I don't know if you noticed this, but people, they don't pick the people from the city to do the show. Like, I'm pretty sure that they ain't done that. Since the last couple times in New Orleans, they didn't ask them to do that shit then. Why are you doing this shit now? Like, why are you doing it now? Like,
yeah, that is a great way to get people off your case by going, what about me? What about me, Paige? What about Raven? What about me? Like, no, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. That's not how it works.
And not to mention, like, doing a halftime show requires a lot of, you know, work, rehearsals, doing this shit right, doing that shit right, making sure your performance goes right, making sure that shit goes right. The last time Harold went away before the live performance, one of them were usually kind of terrible and not that good. And remember when I said he doing it because he's doing hot right now, or he's hot right now. Lil Wayne ain't doing that hot right now in terms of music. Like, maybe a feature here and there, but that's just a feature. That don't be shit. It's like,
yeah, I'm struggling to remember when was the last time Lil Wayne released a song that mattered in some way. I don't remember, and that's kind of the point.
he had no single release in a while, and not even a song featured that caught somebody's eye. And then some people to come to feel like, well, for some reason, and some people act like it's a travesty or some shit. Like, people like Birdman and Nicki Minaj, which. Really, Birdman? You of all people? After the shit you did,
anything for a little bit of extra clout.
After the shit I heard you do, Lil Wayne, from all the shit I heard about you, like, you miss this contract, and have him not release any shit, and all that other bullshit. Now you're sticking for him now. Nicki Minaj, you shouldn't speak at all, Nicki Minaj. Before, can you make a song about you? Considering for certified little boy. No way, certified pedophile.
Wow. So we could potentially have that happen in front of an audience of 120 million people. That would be awesome. And here are the songs I want to hear in the set list. Just start the intro to Like That. Because you can't say all the lyrics on, you know, TV like that. Mad City, Swimming Pools, N95, Humble, All Right, I, Not Like Us. Do all that and I'm set.
Yeah.
I am very excited.
The demon will say, "Play me the grams." I'm like, "No, I can't do that."
I know.
They can't play that shit. But again, the evil part of me is saying, "Hey, play me the grams." Or play me cry together. Or play me cry together.
Man, fuck you, bitch.
Although I will say, even DVD probably will say, whatever you do, don't play Anti-Diaries. Don't. Like, even. Not go with that track.
Now, look, we know Kendrick, when it comes to TV performances, is an outstanding professional. He knows what to do and what not to do, unlike certain. Other individuals, Travis Scott.
Oh yeah, Mr. Whatabout. Where's my Grammy? Shut the fuck up. You still whine about losing a killer mic. You and your fans still whine about losing a killer mic. Oh boy. So anyway, yeah. Here's a bar, Super Bowl 2025. Can't wait. I've been looking forward to this now. Usually, I just because I'm fucking bored. I'm now, I got something to look forward to.
Same. All right, now we have one last news topic here, and how do we cap off all this grand spectacle of ridiculousness? I mean. What do we have to like throw back to one of the earliest high points of the podcast with a resurrection of one of our favorite stupid little sagas? Oh, hey, Billy McFarlane's doing shit. Oh no. I still hate looking at his face.
I thought he was in prison.
That's what I thought too.
Who let him out?
Someone did, apparently, which, honestly, that his face should be the real crime that he's jailed for. He looks like if you asked an AI image generator to fuse fucking... Wait, have I made this joke before?
I don't know.
He looks like a weird fusion of, like, Ben Affleck and Seth MacFarlane.
Oh no.
I can see that, and I hate it.
Oh, ew. God.
So, yeah, the man, the myth, the legend, air quotes, behind the absolute disaster of a luxury music fest known as the Fyre Festival is out of prison, back in commission, and if you're wondering by any chance through all the, through the prison stint and the ritual humiliation all over social media, if you're wondering if this has caused the man to learn anything, then you will be happy to know that Fyre Fest 2 is happening April next year.
In other words, not a damn thing.
So, April 2025, it's on a private island around Mexico, the Caribbean, that general area. The lowest tier of tickets for 4 days will be at $1,400, which, keep in mind, for some people, that basically qualifies as a rent payment. The most expensive packages will be $1.1 million. In other words, exactly one shelf in a college textbook library. Well, college bookstore. You get the point.
So basically 14 robs.
Aw, you think I'm worth that much? Thank you. I appreciate that, man. My dude. But yeah, so at that tier, when you're at $1.1 million, you get luxury yachts, scuba diving, going around the islands. Again, the fucking just... the gall of this guy. So the audacity. This man is 32.
Oh my god.
Oh god.
How old than he is.
I think we have to actually say it all out verbatim, which credit to Abby Jones, the Stereo Gum, for this. tickets for the 4-day fest will be $1,400 at the lowest tier. Oh, this is going to happen on a private island somewhere between Mexico and the Caribbean. So, okay. The most expensive package will set you back a whopping $1.1 million in exchange for luxury yachts, scuba diving, and island hopping, supposedly. In case you needed the reminder, the original Fyre Fest in 2017 was nothing short of a once-in-a-lifetime abysmal disaster. MacFarlane was going to try to redeem himself with a makeup festival the following year, but I guess plans change when you're slapped with multiple fraud charges. This is why independent journalism deserves to be rewarded. Reward high-quality sources like Stereo
Gum. This is good shit.
Not double XL just taking social media hearsay as gospel.
Yeah, and I'll have an owner saying, we just see this shit. Have you talked to us? I mean, us. Not them. They're not like us.
Oh, God. Oh, and by the way, apparently a production company has been hired. The name has not been unveiled, but nobody's booked, and it's supposed to happen in 7 months, so, get ready for bullshit, people!
Oh, wait, hang on, sorry,
I'm looking at the, again, as Abby Jones effortlessly says... We're still 7 months out from when the festival is scheduled to begin, which is one more month than MacFarlane gave himself to plan Fyre Fest 17. Should be fine. If you'd like, you can apply for tickets. Yes, you have to apply. Here, and oh my god, there's actually a link. I haven't clicked it yet.
Oh, no. Oh, Lord.
It looks like something that would give you spyware if you click too far into it.
Fyre 2, taking place April 25th through the 28th. Limited tickets are available by application. Oh, God. Bro, this looks like someone's Squarespace template.
Oh.
Like, you only made this page because you needed to demonstrate something for a fucking ad read on a YouTube video. Oh, my God.
Okay.
One of the comments on the Stereo Gum P says it best. He has to book Katy Perry for this, right?
Oh, no. That's some bullshit. And now thinking about it, I just realized I'm watching the season of Futurama lately. One of the episodes they did was they're doing a parody or spoof parody of Fyre Festival, which I mean it seemed like it was too late, but I'm like, no, it's still relevant more than ever, especially now, which. Yeah,
just pretty much all. The only other thing we really need to say at this point is, like, for the first Fyre Fest, for all the people that got stranded and, like, got fucked over, you could argue that they were, in fact, misled. Like, I don't know. I don't feel much sympathy for people who are able to shell out big bucks for luxury music festivals of that tier and ilk, but I could maybe understand the argument that they were lied to. If you actually buy tickets to this shit, you have no one to blame but your fucking self.
It's like fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you dumbass.
That's all you at this point, motherfucker. Like, all you.
Like, you've been down this road before. You've been down this road before. You can't blame no one. You can't even blame Zoidberg. Blame yourself.
Zoidberg. In fact, you know what you can probably do with, like, the amount of money you need to go to Fyre Fest? Use that money to figure out how to scientifically engineer the existence of Zoidberg in our reality. And that would be a better use of your time.
Or bring the money, study a way to do that hand floating shit. We've seen that a million times now. How about get the money to do that shit?
Oh, Lord. So, God, yeah, like, if this leads to an actual sequel saga that we get to talk about, I'm gonna be scared about, like, what falls after that, because if we're rebooting old sagas, do we have to be worried about a threatened reboot?
Oh no.
I hope not.
Let's see.
Is that guy even still alive?
Okay, so it's a threat. Okay,
now that I think about it.
Okay, so the threat reboot. I say Woodstock 99 reboot, but ain't that guy dead?
No. Yeah, he's dead.
Okay, never mind on that. Shit, what else? I mean, so far the only thing doing now is the Kendrick Drake saga, and that's still going on.
Round two's not happening, academic. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, only because round one probably never ended, as far as we know.
It's gonna end at halftime of the Super Bowl. Permanently.
Fatality.
We will capture and compromise Drake to a permanent end.
It is truly... The party dies.
Hey! And with all that out of the way, I feel like that's a good enough cap on the new songs, and that just leaves what is no doubt the shortest part of this podcast, the new album releases for the week of September 20th, 2024. Starting at the top, we have the self-titled debut album from Vended, that being the metal band formed by the sons of Corey Taylor and Sean Crahan of Slipknot fame. There is, unfortunately, a new Nightwish album called Yesterwind. If you're a fan of Future, he's got a new project out called Mixtape Pluto. Of course, as we mentioned from The Alchemist, there's The Genuine Articulate. From producer Jamie XX, we have their newest album, In Waves. from saxophonist Colin Stetson. We have The Love It Took to Leave You.
Ooh.
From Ed Schrader's Music Beat, we have their newest project, Orchestra Hits. If you're big on Keith Urban, for some reason, there's the new album, High. From Miranda Lambert, there's the album Postcards from Texas. Nelly Furtado has her newest album, Seven. And unfortunately, Katy Perry's 143.
That is last. And just last.
Yeah, that's last.
And least. Like, at all the way at the bottom, least.
And it's taking to find out how many. It's taking for how many albums she sold. I guess not many, or might be worse than Witness.
143.
It might be worse than Witness.
Oh, God. I don't even want to think about that.
It probably will be worse than Witness.
But, yeah. Now that just leaves us with cleaning house and getting the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can you be found on the internet?
Well, on Twitter, on Zuck Twitter, on Dorsey Blue Twitter, just look for Xander's Thoughts. Just you find the Beowulf icon. That's me. I'm trying to be more active for the sake of my brain to make sure people know that I'm still around. Why am I on every platform? Because fuck you. That's why. Just every now and then.
I'm not gonna laugh for
you. Also the Discord and my other show and wherever else. It's been a long show. I'm tired.
Yeah. I thought that was actually you, but then I'm like, no, that's not him. He never moves face. He never will. In this year's space, I'm gonna be there'll be a white fade out, or me.
I have VTuber syndrome. My face can never be shown.
Beowulf. I've always wondered what that was.
Skullgirls, you pleb.
Listen, I'm not cool. I didn't get a Steam account until they released Persona 4 Golden on Steam, okay?
I know that from that one movie. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know about the old Tales and shit. Anyway. Sorry.
No worries. Mark, what about you?
Of course, I'm on almost everywhere at Metabic Media, because I don't know, whatever I feel like saying shit. And of course, my site, my hypeone.com, where recently I have posted my Back in Time flashback thing, where I talk about the anime seasons, which I talked about summer 2014, which, oh shit, I remember the season of shit like Tokyo Ghoul and Agami Ga Kill. Oh god, it's sort of like, oh, okay, I remember, oh wow, that was some bullshit. Especially that guy that got killed. Yes, after 10 years, I still think that show sucked. There you go.
Ow, the edge. And as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, most social medias, at Rob Barracuda. You can email me, robert@surrealresolution.com, for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcast. Audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Surreal Rezo. Like us on Facebook. Visit the website SurrealResolution.com for written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, all of that jazz. And of course, be sure to jump into our Discord server as well. That's the most reliable way to be immediately notified whenever anything new goes up on the site. Well, oh man, that's gonna do it for this momentous episode 365. We'll of course be back when the next episode happens. Hopefully it's not gonna be as jam-packed. Well, okay, what I'm hoping is that there's at least balance. Like, you know, there's gotta be a middle ground between like 5 or 6 songs in a week and fucking 16 to 20.
In other words, an album length of songs that mostly, if Alex said an album around that's to cut the shit out because it was too long.
Yeah, wait, didn't we make that joke already?
Yeah, we did, but that was 2 hours ago. Who remembers by now?
Also, I think Discord dropped the call around that time. I get Discord jump calls and shit. I hate that shit. It happens, all right? Sometimes I don't know what the fuck is happening.
Jeez. The joys of podcast recording. So, yeah, we'll be back next time. And until then, we are free.
I'm going to
sleep. Good night, everybody.
I'm going to sleep on your couch.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So long, and thanks for all the fish. And guitar solo, fuck yeah.
Thanks for listening. Now get out.